prepare recess. If all attorneys would be sure to sign in on the sign-in sheet, if you've not done so. And most of you know this, but I'm going to repeat it for everybody's benefit. Each side has 15 minutes to argue, and appellant's counsel, of course, may reserve a portion of that for rebuttal. So would you like to reserve a portion of that 15 minutes?
Yes, Your Honor. 3 minutes, please.
3 minutes? All right. You have it, and you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, Christopher Reyes on behalf of Mr. Burris. The sole issue in this case is whether DNA evidence alone is enough to identify a criminal defendant in a criminal case. The facts of this case are that the victims could not identify anybody. They did not identify race, height, weight, eye color, hair color, skin color, any sort of distinguishing marks such as tattoos or moles. And the only evidence tying Mr. Burris to this crime was DNA that was found on a bandana not far from where the crime occurred. And the victims did state that that was the bandana that was used by one of the robbers. This bandana was then tested, and his DNA came back, and that is the only evidence in this case. This is still kind of a case of first impression for this court, whether DNA alone, and only DNA, is sufficient to satisfy the element.
The trial judge found it was the only DNA on the bandana. Right?
That's correct. The trial judge definitely did find that it was the only DNA found on the bandana.
I know you rely on Jennings in distinguishing, or excuse me, not distinguishing Jennings, I guess, from this. But in Jennings, there was, as Judge Beal just alluded to, there was multiple contributors of DNA, and we held in that case that the reasonable inference or reasonable hypothesis of innocence that flowed from that was that he certainly could have been wearing the item, but not necessarily at the time of the robbery, or conversely, someone else could have been wearing it, but not as often. Here, though, we have him as the single contributor, the only DNA on the object which has been identified as being worn by the perpetrator of this robbery. It seems to me that the distinction is pretty obvious.
There is a distinction there, absolutely. There were multiple contributors of the DNA in the Jennings case, and only one contributor here. But the logic that was used in that case and the evidence that was presented.
What reasonable hypothesis of innocence flows from this evidence?
The reasonable hypothesis of innocence that flows from that is that he touched it at some point, but that doesn't mean he was wearing it at the time that this robbery was committed. If you look at the Jennings case, it's clear that DNA is unusual, and people will leave more DNA. People may not leave DNA. And so just because someone's DNA is on something does not mean that they're the only person that has ever handled that piece of clothing. When we're talking
But the important thing about Jennings is that the testimony in Jennings was that the fact that the defendant there was a major contributor amongst multiple contributors tripped the case going the other way. In this case, we don't have multiple contributors.
That's correct. We do not have multiple contributors. But the issue is that DNA, just because his DNA is on there, doesn't mean that someone else didn't handle that bandana. And
there's no evidence of that. You can't, reasonable hypothesis of innocence can't flow from speculation outside the evidence.
I would agree with you. But the Commonwealth's own evidence showed that a similar bandana, if not the same bandana, was handled by multiple people in the pictures that they submitted into evidence. The reason that they're submitting these pictures into evidence of Mr. Burris with a bandana and other people touching it is to say that's a bandana that was used, or he's known to be using these types of bandanas. And we see multiple people touching it. It's entirely possible someone had access to a bandana that he touched. And we know that he's touching them in these pictures, and there's other people in the pictures who are also touching them. So I don't think that's not flowing from the evidence. I think that is a reasonable hypothesis. There was no evidence presented whatsoever as to when those pictures were taken or when Mr. Burris had handled this bandana other than...
Could the fact finder, if the fact finder thought it was the same bandana, as you say, it may not be the same bandana, the one in the pictures, but if he thought it was the same bandana, couldn't the fact finder infer, well, maybe other people touched it, but that's a while ago. And so the only one that shows that there's any DNA on it, and it's the trial judge found, as we were talking about a moment ago, was the only DNA found on there, that's more recent. And then you have the facts of the bandana being found very close to the scene of the robbery, that the police dog immediately tracks from the scene straight to the bandana, then finds other things too, but he finds the bandana first. So why isn't that enough for a rational fact finder to conclude that your client was the robber?
I think the issue comes down to the only thing tying him to that is DNA. And if we look at this case, as we look at fingerprint cases, there has to be some sort of corroborating evidence. The fingerprint cases, they show that someone left a fingerprint on something that was actually part of the crime, like a broken window in the Tyler case. It was a broken window of the place that was broken into, and fingerprints were found on it. That's corroborating evidence that he did that.
Hypothetically, if we had, say, a knife used in a robbery, and your client's fingerprints were the only fingerprints found on a knife abandoned at a place where the tracking dog had traced the path of the robber to at least the location where the knife is, would you be making the same argument?
I believe I would, and the reason I'm saying that is the tracking dog was not tracking Mr. Burroughs. They were just tracking a scent of someone that committed this crime. Just the fact that this
then
DNA...
It led to a bandana with your client's DNA on it. So I guess...
Correct.
Again, my analogy would be if it were a knife with your client's DNA, are you saying that would be insufficient evidence as a matter of law to conclude that your client wielded the knife during a robbery?
I think that's a slippery slope to go down to say that DNA is this miracle piece of evidence that can automatically identify someone. And you're,
well, it can't automatically identify someone. What it can't do is necessarily tie up every single element of the offense.
Correct. And here, I don't even think it tied up the identity. In the example you just presented about a knife, if someone had a knife that someone handled previously, the person who was alleged to have done it, handles it with a glove so they don't leave fingerprints on it and then abandons it, that is something that could happen. And that's why there needs to be some sort of corroboration to this. If his DNA was found on the rain guard, or if his DNA was found on the plastic bags or the contents that were in those plastic bags, then I don't have an argument, because those things were fruits of the crime. This bandana was used by the person who committed the crime, and just because his DNA was on it doesn't mean that he's the only person that touched it. If you look at the certificate of analysis where the bandana was tested, it specifically says a DNA profile was arrived at by testing this bandana. But then if you look at the other two things that were tested that day, they specifically say they tested certain parts of those things. They said, we tested the cuffs of the sweatshirt and we tested the interior of the face mask. The Department of Forensic Science didn't make any sort of equivocation on this bandana. It just says, we tested the bandana. We don't know if the whole bandana was tested. We don't know if only part of it was tested. We have no idea. And that's evidence that the Commonwealth is responsible to present to the fact finder.
Well, it does say on there, item one, a DNA profile was developed from the bandana. And again, a DNA profile is singular. And it says it's consistent with the following individual, found to be consistent with the following individual, Andrew V. Burroughs. So everything is in the singular there, whereas in the other one it talks about a DNA mixture profile.
No, I agree with you. But my point is, if you look at that, it says that they tested a specific part of the sweatshirt and a specific part of the face mask. It doesn't say they developed it from the entire sweatshirt or the entire face mask. So this bandana is different. They don't say if they tested
the way DNA is conducted, and I'm sure there was testimony to this effect, is the forensic people look for sweat stains, blood stains, saliva, liquids that contain DNA, or hair follicles that might contain microcardial DNA, things of that nature.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's what they test. I mean, that is the fabric of the item that provides DNA. It's simply the surface on which DNA can be deposited.
That's absolutely correct. And I was not the trial attorney in this case, and I would have done things differently, but there was no testimony about DNA. There was no testimony by an expert whatsoever in this case, and that's very unfortunate for this court and for Mr. Burroughs, because if there had been an expert, there would have been testimony about, just because his DNA was on it. We don't know the recency. And you asked me, couldn't the judge infer that he was the most recent person to have touched it? We know that's not true from the Jennings case, but we don't know that's not true from the evidence that was adduced at this case. And so that's very unfortunate that it wasn't brought out.
In response to Judge Humphrey's question, hypothetical about the knife, you said mm-hmm. that the knife would be the fruits of the crime. Isn't the black bandana here part of the fruits of the crime because that was used to disguise the assailant?
When I was talking about the knife, in a sense, yes, and my point remains. If this person who committed the robbery was wearing two bandanas and left one behind, then that other bandana underneath it would protect the DNA from getting on the uppermost bandana that's left behind. So it could be analogous. Now, that's not in evidence, and that's not something that was argued. I'm just trying to show this court that we know that DNA is interesting. We know that it can be left by touch. We know it can be left by spit and hair follicles. And some people leave more DNA than others. There are people who are called secretors, and they leave more DNA. And none of these things were brought out to trial court, unfortunately. I think they would have been very helpful.
I agree, that would have been very helpful, but that questions the science. It doesn't necessarily question the credibility of the evidence, though.
It absolutely questions the credibility of the evidence, because if we had a scientist in here, they would say just because someone's DNA is on something does not mean...
That would be something that the fact finder could consider, whether or not it wanted to conclude that this circumstantial evidence was probative enough to convict someone beyond a reasonable doubt.
Absolutely. I agree. That is something that the fact finder could use and make a determination of the credibility of the evidence. I think that if we say that only DNA is enough, it is a slippery slope. We all come in contact with things all the time where we may be depositing DNA and we don't know what it's being used for later.
Well, DNA certainly may not be enough. In fact, that's the exact situation in Jennings. DNA was not enough because of the fact that there were dealing with mixtures mm-hmm. and so forth. And you know, I take your point, but I mean, I'm somewhat familiar with the science behind DNA. And when you're dealing with mixtures of multiple individuals' DNA, the probability, the ability to establish within a degree of probability to the tune of about 8 million, which is more than people on the planet, as we see with single source DNA analysis, goes way down. So, but that's not what we have here. We have an absolute factual conclusion that a fact finder could reach that your client wore this particular bandana, and evidence that this particular bandana was worn by one of the two robbers. That's what we have here.
And the way you worded that, I think, hits it on the head. Yes, we have evidence that he wore this bandana. We don't know when. We have evidence that this robber wore this bandana. We don't know if it's the same person. I think that's what this comes down to. I'd reserve the rest. Thank you.
Mr. Jeffrey.
I promised myself I'd be ahead of the game if I didn't say good morning, because I'm so reflexively used to doing that. Good afternoon, may it please the court. Donald Jeffrey on behalf of the Commonwealth.
To resolve this case, does this court have to make a determination that DNA alone can never suffice to convict someone beyond a reasonable doubt? Do we need to reach that conclusion?
I think the answer to that is probably no, Judge Olson. I mean, it's very fact-specific, and this is a very different set of facts from Jennings. What I would submit to you is that this case is resolved under the court's standard of review with respect to reasonable hypotheses being questions of fact, and the court's rejection. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
What corroborative evidence would you suggest this court take a look at to enable us to not have to reach the conclusion that one cannot be convicted on DNA alone?
Well, here you certainly have the other evidence that the bandana was identified, or two of the victims identified this individual as being is wearing a bandana similar to the one that was found, and also the bandana was found in close proximity to the robbery. So that's corroborative. I think to get at your original question, I think you've probably already answered that question in Jennings, which I believe Judge Humphreys authored, and there were some ancillary facts associated with the DNA. You don't have that here. You don't have the multiple contributors. I would submit to you, there were a lot of questions asked of my opponent with respect to or at least arguments made with respect to expert testimony. I think there are hypotheses that are advanced that just don't spring from the evidence, and I believe Judge Beals pointed out that in at least one of those certificates, it's essentially a profile, singular, and there certainly is no evidence of another contributor here. So I think that leads to the conclusion that this was, in fact, a question of fact for the fact finder. The problem in Jennings is that, as the court found, the evidence was in equipoise given the nature of the DNA evidence before the trial court. You don't have that situation here.
How far do you suggest the analysis has to go? And I'm going to give you an hypothetical, and obviously we're not talking about hypotheticals, but I'm trying to get a good feel for your theory of the case. What if the dog that alerted to the bandana had not found the bandana, and let's say through some circumstances the defendant was identified as a suspect, went to his house, and the bandana was found in the house? Would we be talking about a different analysis or the same analysis?
So no dog tracking, but he's got a similar bandana in his house that probably, well, I don't know if he has DNA or not, but I guess it really doesn't matter for purposes of your hypothetical because we tie it to him one way or the other.
Right.
I think that's a close question as to whether it's an issue of law. I that's a piece of circumstantial evidence.
And it's a tough question, and I'm looking at the analytical framework that this court might want to adopt one way or the other.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Let me supplement this. Maybe I can make it a little easier for you to answer, at least if not. Whether you like the answer or not, I guess. So, with respect to Jennings,
right.
If all we had were a description of a bandana and not finding the actual bandana, but some evidence that led to this particular individual's house, maybe matches a general description or something, and he's been involved in other similar robberies, so the police decide to question him, and he answers the door and he's wearing a bandana, which looks just like the one that's described, would that be enough?
I think the problem it's suggested, and I don't remember the specific testimony here, Judge Humphreys, but I'll assume for the sake of answering your question that the testimony is very similar to the way that the defense describes it. There's no reason to believe this isn't a fairly commonly available bandana. I guess I give you an example. The perpetrator was wearing a Navy suit jacket, a fairly commonly available item. I think without additional evidence linking him to the crime scene, I think that's probably the break in the chain you have here that would push that probably to the realm where the appellate court would have to say.
I guess the question for Judge Alston's point is simply that if all we have is a chain that goes, you know, a robber is wearing this particular item of clothing.
Right.
And that's positively identified as being worn by one of the perpetrators of the crime. And someone's DNA, and only one person's DNA, is found on that item of clothing. Is that enough, ipso facto, to convict of a crime?
Are you talking about with it being in proximity as it was here, or?
Yeah, in other words, you know, that's our facts.
Right,
know?
I understand. I just want to make sure I understood your question.
So the question, I mean, I think where Judge Alston is trying to get, and we're always concerned about unintended consequences, is standing alone, is finding someone's DNA on an article that was used either in or during or somehow connected unquestionably to a crime enough to convict the individual of participation in that particular crime?
Here you have the tracking testimony, and I understand that Judge Alston backed that out of the hypothetical, but you have the tracking testimony and the testimony of the witnesses. I the facts that you have here, I think, create a question for the trier of fact. I hope I'm answering your question.
Well, of course, that has to exclude every reasonable hypothesis, because this is what innocence that actually flows from the evidence. And I understand your opponent essentially arguing that given that the bandana was worn by the perpetrator of the crime, the fact that his client's DNA happens to be on it doesn't necessarily establish that he was actually wearing it at the time of the crime.
I think I would go back to the way the certificates are drafted, in terms of a contributor, the fact that we don't have expert testimony. There are a whole lot of hypotheses that were thrown about in terms of, you know, somebody could be wearing gloves or there may be some recency issue.
There's no evidence of any of that.
No evidence of any of that. And I think that's, it's a narrow issue. It probably doesn't answer your broader question, Judge Humphreys, as far as where the line is. But I think that's what kicks this case into the place where there was an hypothesis of innocence that could be rejected by a fact finder.
Judge Humphrey's point about the unintended consequences is very significant. And as I'm going through this, and I appreciate your argument, and tough cases make for tough questions from us, and we hope you resolve them for us. But my thinking is this. Suppose you are in a situation where you have a, quote, high crime area, all right? And let's say that this black bandana is something that is customarily worn like the blue jacket. You know, a lot of people in certain areas wear bandanas, blue, red, black, or whatever. And the tracking dog, and there's a robbery in that area, and the tracking dog finds a bandana, and the defendant happens to live in that area and happened to have left his bandana on the ground. Can you really get a conviction based upon those kinds of circumstances? And that's the logical consequences if the decision is written as broad as might be suggested.
I think the way you hem it in, and again, I'm not trying to be disingenuous and not answer your question.
Yes, sir.
But I think the way... One of the ways you get to that in this opinion, and perhaps write it narrowly, is we don't have anything to support some alternative hypothesis like that. The defendant didn't testify, and as I cited the court to Turner in the brief, and there's nothing. You're hypothetical. The defendant testifies and says, "Hey, I had a red bandana, and I dropped it when I was there two nights ago." You've at least got that. You don't have that here, and I think that is
so
important.
So the hypothesis of innocence must spring from the evidence and not spring from speculation.
Absolutely, and again, you know, I don't want to belabor Turner. I know you've been on the court for a long time. You've seen us argue
some
that point
long,
before. Turner and a trial judge before that. Turner certainly talks about how and makes the point the defendant doesn't have a burden to testify, but the trial court doesn't have to supply evidence that's lacking. I think the question becomes harder, back to what Judge Humphrey said, if a defendant comes up and gives testimony like that. I mean, where does that leave you? I don't think you have to resolve that question. If you want me to try to take a stab at it, I will, but I think I'm going to probably leave you with that it's a very, very tough question.
In Jennings, the reasonable hypothesis of innocence actually flowed from the DNA evidence itself.
Correct.
When the examiner, you know, couched the language in the report, which we clearly don't have here.
Right, and that was, I mean, I think that was probably a fairly easy call based on the evidence that was there from the expert, which you don't have that type of evidence in this case, in addition to the fact that you've got one known contributor and no additional known contributors, which was not the case in Jennings. And I think the Jennings expert also addressed these things about recency or the fact that if someone was a major contributor doesn't mean that was the last person that had it. You don't have those type of things here. A much easier case. Kind of going back to your hypothetical and maybe springing it out just in terms of if we find the item at the house, if you think of anything you can think of, common items, blue jackets, 12-gauge shotgun. I think that's an easy one. I think that conviction comes up to you and you go, well, 12-gauge shotgun is a pretty common item. Is that all you've got? Obviously, we might have something in terms of recency, but I think you'd need something corroborative, even at the appellate level, to say that this evidence is sufficient, and this is probably a place where we intervene. I don't think you have those type of facts here, and I hope I've answered your question in terms of the line.
And you suggest also that the time sequencing here is important, too, that this black bandana was found as, quote, fresh evidence at the scene right after the robbery occurred.
Sure. I mean, use my shotgun example, and I don't mean to suggest, because I may give you some facts that give you pause, but you start tightening the links in that chain with my shotgun example. If the robber fled in the direction of that house, we had some reason, posit whatever that reason might be, to suspect that the individual who lived at this house may have been the perpetrator, and the police show up there and it's a 12-gauge shotgun. Much closer issue on appeal than just my hypothetical 3 days later, we thought it might be John Smith, and we showed up at his house, and voila, he had a 12-gauge shotgun. Obviously, closing the timeline is a big piece of this case in terms of why it's something that is not plainly wrong or without supporting evidence.
And to follow up on that, The black bandana, as you noted, was found very quickly, and the dog went straight to it, went to that before even went to the mask or the sweatshirt. But just to clarify something you said earlier, that the witnesses said that it was consistent with the bandana they saw on the robber. I think April Brown, looking at her testimony, she goes, what is that? That's the black bandana. The one you saw that night? Yes, that's the one that was on me. The guy that was on you? Uh-huh. So she and Jerome Barnes both say, he specifically says too, that that wasn't consistent with it. That was the bandana.
That was actually the very next point I was going to make, Judge Beals, and I did make that point on brief. That was the testimony in this record, and that was given without objection. I think viewed in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, that's something you can consider. I mean, I'm certainly cognizant of the fact that people don't always speak artfully, but the fact of the matter is that evidence did come in without qualification of it being similar to, and I did say that earlier, I understand that, but yes, that is a point I made on brief. I don't think that's the necessarily the dispositive point in this case. I think even if you were to say we're construing it more as similar to, I think we still have enough here. But yes, I think that's absolutely a fact in the mix here. And certainly, if you disagree with me as to whether that's a catalyst in this case, I would certainly ask you to consider under the standard of review whether that's what the defense is stuck with in this case. Because that is, I believe you're correct, two witnesses said it, not right. Just one.
And Barnes and Brown.
They came in without objection, without any sort of qualification, as I recall, in cross-examination. It just wasn't explored at all. So you do have that in this case as well, which I think helps put another link in the chain. And because of that, that's certainly another factor the court might consider in the case. You know, clearly, this court, just in conclusion, unless the court has additional questions, the court in Jennings found that there was evidence that there was not sufficient evidence as a matter of law from which a reasonable trier of fact could make this finding. This was tried in a bench trial, and I believe that the hypotheses that were advanced were reasonably rejected by the trial court. And for that reason, unless the court asks further questions, I would ask that you affirm the judgment below.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Jeffrey. Mr. Reyes, you have your rebuttal time.
Thank you. I'd like to bring this back to a point that Judge Alston made about corroborating evidence. There is no corroborating evidence that Mr. Burroughs was the person who committed this crime. The only evidence that he was wearing that bandana is that his DNA was on it. We don't have anything. We don't have a confession. We don't have them saying how tall he was, what either of these people looked like at all, body build, or even by recognition by voice. They said that they heard things. There is no corroborating evidence here that he was the person. The only thing we have is the DNA on the bandana. And it's exactly as Judge Alston said, if you go to someone's house and they have this common bandana, will that be enough to sustain a conviction? And I would argue it would not be enough. If the person can't identify them, all they can say is, I know the person is wearing this common item. It's exactly the same as an eyewitness identification of an item.
I can't speak for the court, but I would think that I don't think anybody in this court would be willing to go so far as to say the DNA evidence alone is enough to convict. I think what we need to be concerned about is the quality of the corroborative testimony, the corroborative evidence. And the point that Judge Beals made is pretty significant in that one of the witnesses to one of the victims of this robbery testified without question, without any qualification whatsoever, that this was the bandana that was worn by the perpetrator of the offense. DNA on the bandana, DNA is to the exclusion of everybody else, your client's DNA. So that's how the puzzle is put together from the Commonwealth's perspective.
Yes, I understand that. And I don't see it as going together like that. They're saying that this bandana is the bandana. And even if I concede that that bandana that was found was the one that was used, then all we have is his DNA on it. Again, that's not corroborating evidence.
But the testimony of the one witness, which was unchallenged, was this is the bandana that the individual who robbed me wore.
It's as if his name and address was sewn into that bandana. That's the significance of the DNA here. The question is, would that be enough? They found this bandana used in the robbery with his name in it. Would that be enough standing alone to convict him?
And I would argue I don't think it would be enough. I just don't think the science supports that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Reyes. We will greet you.